Welcome, everybody. This is Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and this is the Right Now Mastermind class. Today is April 2nd, 2014, and I'm delighted to have you with us. Our topic today is Anatomy of a Bestseller. What does it take to write a best-selling nonfiction book? And I'm excited to talk about this. I've been looking at this for about a year and a half, and slowly writing a book about this, so I'm really glad to be able to talk about it. So I'm writing this book called The Anatomy of a Bestseller, and it came about because I started to think that books don't really become bestsellers because of some magic, like they talk about in the book The Secret, where you just think my book's going to be a bestseller, and it is. It's really there are really some definable strategies that make books bestsellers, and we can learn those strategies and replicate them. So I've been studying what makes a nonfiction book a bestseller, and I've concentrated my work on the part of the equation that we control. What can we do before the book is published to help it become a bestseller? And I'm going to talk about just a piece of that equation today. In an hour, we can't go through everything, but I do want to talk about, the key ingredients of a best-selling nonfiction book. Doing this is not going to guarantee that your book is going to be a bestseller, but it's certainly going to help it get into the categories or get up into to up its chances of becoming a bestseller. But before we get to that, I want to start with the essential question: how do you define a bestseller? Because there's so many different ways that people define best-selling book. So I went to Wikipedia and said, well, what's their definition? And they say, a bestseller is a book that is identified as extremely popular by its inclusion on lists currently top-selling or frequently borrowed titles that are based on publishing industry and book trade figures and library circulation statistics, and then published by newspapers, magazines, or bookstore chains. So what they're talking about is that a best-selling book is just a book that's identified as such by certain popular lists, and those lists include the New York Times bestseller list, USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, and Publishers Weekly. Amazon maintains its own lists, and many books and classes are out there that will teach you how to work the system and put your book on the number one in the number one spot in your category. But really, the numbers for Amazon are basically you need to sell about 1,000 books in the first few days of publication to become a bestseller in your category. And as I said, there's lots of strategies to do that, and part of that is picking the correct category. But we're not going into that today. If you want to land on the Wall Street Journal list, you need to sell 3,000 books in the first week. If you want to land on the New York Times bestseller list, you need to sell about 9,000 books in the first week. And to land on the USA Today list, and this is a little more confusing, you need to be one of the top 150 books that are sold in a number of different retail outlets in the previous week. And they do not distinguish categories. So it's interesting to look at their list because it tends to be primarily fiction, but it's a real mix of fiction and nonfiction. So you're competing against everybody for the USA Today list. Publishers tend to define a bestseller for their own benefit because they want to be able to use the term in their advertising. But these are the numbers that I've heard in various places. About 10 years ago, what I heard was that in order to be a bestseller, you have to have a book that's sold more than 40,000 copies. But recently, I've heard that, for fiction, if you sell just 7,000 copies, it can make you a star. And the crime writer, Tess Gerritsen, said the number is more like 5,000 is going to make you a bestseller. In the UK, a bestseller has sales ranging from 4,000 to 25,000 copies. And in Canada, a bestseller is a book that sold only 5,000 copies. So you can see it's very varied to think about the bestseller. But there are let's say, it's very varied. People define bestseller in many different ways. My job today is to help you think about how to create a nonfiction book that has the potential to break into one of these categories. For me, there are three distinct pieces that help make a book sell well and that you control when you create your book. And those pieces are the topic, the target market, and the book's format. And when I say book's format, I mean how it's organized as well as how it's written. So for me, the ideal formula of a best-selling book is basically this: hot topic plus defined target market plus format that works equals best-selling book. And I want to talk about each of these in turn. The first is getting a hot topic. So what's a hot topic? What's a topic that's going to make a book a bestseller? Think for a minute what separates a best-selling book topic from the book that languishes on the shelves, going out of print quickly. The best-selling book provides a solution to a common problem, provides a solution that's proven, fast, safe, fun, innovative and simple, and is written by an author that readers believe have credibility. So we're going to take this apart. There's basically three things that make a topic a hot topic. One, it's a solution to a common problem. Two, it's a solution that's quick, innovative, and simple. And three, it's written by an author with credibility. So let's start with one. The book has to provide a solution to a common problem. No doubt at some point in your life you've walked into a bookstore or Walmart or Target and seen a best-selling book or product and said, oh, I wish I'd thought of that. Or worse, you see the book you'd hope to write, only someone got there first, and then you know you really hit your head with your hand. And on those days, it's tempting to just give up and stop writing. So here's someone in New York or California that you don't even know, took your very best idea, wrote the definitive book on it, and is now raking in the big bucks. So it's enough to make you want to go just take a nap or have chocolate. But take a deep breath. This book that's a little bit like yours and that's selling well might actually be good news. A long time ago, about 450 BC, the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes wrote, "What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun." Although years ago, long before the car and the airplane, the internet and the smartphone, a writer mused that it had all been said and done before, and there's nothing new to write or think about or create. And I think perhaps we have the same thought after we've seen our book. The one we thought up a few years ago, maybe even the one that we wrote and published that didn't sell at all, on a shelf with someone else's name on it. So instead of giving up, instead of saying, oh, well, my idea is toast, think about this. Being first on the scene with a new idea is not necessarily going to make you a bestseller. In fact, it might work against you. I don't think people buy novel ideas. They may think they do, but they don't. Most of us approach experts, whether in person or in books, to be told what we already know or believe to be true. We want experts to affirm what we already think. So think about it. If you buy a new pair of jeans and you think you look hot in them, when you say to your spouse, "How do I look in these jeans?" you want your spouse to say, "Well, you look hot in them. I agree with you." You don't want your spouse to say, "Oh, I think it makes your butt look big." No, you've already decided how you feel, what you think about these jeans. And I think, and you want that affirmation. I think it's the same with books. We want authors to write books that affirm what we think and know. So if we believe that men are odd and women are complicated, then we'll probably be interested in buying a book, "Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus," which was a bestseller back in 1992. Or today we'd buy the book, "The Female Brain," which is a bestseller today by Luann Brezendine. The first key to knowing that your topic is hot is noting that it's been done before. Of course, in order for your book to sell, you're going to have to show the reader, whether that's your agent, your editor, or the book buyer, that your take on the topic is fresh, You have new and better information. Your story is rich and moving. You have an accessible approach or a new tool to help solve the problem once and for all. Your book has what it takes to both affirm what the reader believes to be true and blow their mind by talking about it in a new and different way. So we're talking about the three things that make an idea a hot idea. And so the first thing we talked about was that it's a solution to a common problem. It's something that readers believe to be true. The second thing is that it's a solution that's proven to be fast, safe, fun, innovative, and simple. And there are many ways to kind of take a look at, is my book all of those things. One of the tools that I find to be the most helpful is the book Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath. And if you've come to some of these mastermind classes, you've probably heard me talk about them and talk about their work because they think it's so helpful. So let's just review kind of their six ideas of sticky books. And as I talk about these, I'm going to use some health and diet books because health and diet books are kind of evergreen bestsellers. Evergreen meaning they never go out of popularity. People are always wanting to know the best, quickest, fastest, easiest way to lose weight. So the first thing that will help you know if your idea is a hot idea is simplicity. The Heath brothers use the words simple and profound. These are the ideas that make you say, again, duh, why didn't I think of that? So one of the greatest examples of this is the series Eat This, Not That by the by one of the Zenzenkos. And it's a simple idea that you can replace this calorie-laden choice at a restaurant or at home with a choice that's a little more healthful, less calories, less fat, and so forth. Duh. It's so simple. But these guys have made runaway bestsellers with these books. The second thing is unexpectedness. It's an idea that's unexpected, and it generates the curiosity of the reader. So the reader wants to know more. This morning, I saw a great example. Good Morning America had a segment about a new book on diet, and the tagline was basically, you know, what about a diet where you can eat more and still lose weight? I was all in, you know, there I am sweating away on my treadmill thinking, oh, I'm starving, this would be great. So that unexpectedness makes the idea sticky and hot. The third thing is concreteness. You can describe your idea using concrete words versus philosophical ones. Think words and information that connect with the senses. Again, Eat This, Not That is a great example because it's low on text, high on images. It's very concrete. Readers look at a picture of all the things that are not good for them, and then next to it is a picture of things that are good for them, and it's like, oh, I get it. Fourth is credibility. There are a gazillion ideas out there, and you have happened on one that you think is hot, then you need to be able to define why you're credible to write about it. I had looked at a lot of books on writing books fast before I wrote Write-A-Thon, but the real reason I felt like I was a credible person to write about it was because I had written several books really fast. Another example from the diet and exercise field is the series of books that start with the title You. You on a diet, you losing weight. They're all written by Dr. Oz, who's obviously very qualified and very credible. It would be very different if Dr. Oz weighed 400 pounds, but he doesn't. He's a healthy guy, he's a physician, and he's very credible talking about how to eat differently. The fifth way to judge this is emotions. You need to have an emotional hook to your idea. When the readers hear your title and elevator speech, they feel some sort of tug in their gut or their heart. And I'm going to have my example for five and six together. Number six is stories. Even though concrete details sell, facts don't alone sell. Ideas connected to stories have a better chance of selling. And stories make things concrete in many ways. Books that have personal anecdotes or stories embedded in them are easier and more fun to read. And they make the book sticky. So a book that really hits it on both the emotional note and the storybook is SPARK, 28 Breakthrough Plan for Losing Weight. And it's written by the founder of SPARK People, and it's a very wonderful book because the stories are so inspiring. So those are the six features that you can look at to see, is my topic quick, innovative, and simple? Is it something that's going to engage readers? And the third thing that you need to think about when you're thinking, is this a hot topic, is do I have the credibility to write it? A book that's going to be hot and a bestseller must be written by an author that readers believe have credibility. You know, when we read books like The Secret, we might think that finding the best-selling book idea is a little bit like winning the lottery. We buy our tickets to write our books and then hope that Lady Luck or the gods will intervene for us. And so with some magic combination of a good book and the right publicity, we'll land on the bestseller list. But I don't think that's true. I think most of the people who write best-selling books have been at it for years. They might have written 10 other books that did not sell well before this one hit the bestseller lists. The one thing they have in common is this: they work hard at writing. They dedicate their time to finding and developing ideas that are most likely to become hot. So I want to talk a little bit about how to find an idea that you have deep credibility to write about. And I talked about this before. I've talked about this when I talk about blogs. I just think this is so essential to really stay true to yourself and your integrity and develop ideas that are part of your circle of influence and deep credibility, because the people who listen to you are going to listen to you more on these issues. So I want you to think about what you know in a few different areas of expertise. And this is an exercise that you can do at home, and I've blogged about it before, so I'll send you a link to the blog when I send out the recording. If you're just joining us and you want to mute yourself, you can push star six to mute yourself, and then you can unmute yourself at the end of the call. So I really want you to spend some time thinking about what you know in a few distinct areas. You know, most of us think first about our education. So think first about your formal and informal education. I think that this can be really helpful in kind of figuring out, well, what do I know? You know, for some of us, college was a long time ago, but it's good to know, okay, what was I studying back then? What did I cover in my college major? Or, you know, what have I taken in continuing education classes for my job? Or what other kind of workshops have I taken through community education programs? What kind of writing workshops have I taken? What kind of other workshops have I taken to maybe become a gardener or do other sorts of practical things in my life? So the first area I want you to pay attention to is education. That's kind of a duh. The second area I want you to think about is your experience. So look at your life and list the experiences that you might be able to write about it. And I know that some of your experiences that are going to be fairly common, and you might say, well, who would want to hear about that? But the truth is, for some people, what you write about is going to be innovative and interesting and helpful. So don't negate that this might be an area that you could write about it that could become a bestseller. So you could write about, you know, learning to drive, starting an exercise program, cooking dinner. Note your unique twist on this. Maybe you had to learn how to drive and had a broken leg while you were doing it. Or maybe you, instead of just starting an exercise program, quietly you did it with a plunge by doing the polar bear plunge. Or maybe you started learning to cook because you became affected by severe food allergies. So, you know, all those experiences are very helpful. And don't forget the painful or challenging experiences, because some of those will make good articles, blog posts, or best-selling books. The third area is specialized knowledge. This is stuff that you probably know at a deeper level than the average person, that most people walk around thinking, don't even think about it, don't even know about it. This might be because of your education. It might be because of your experience. It might be because of personal curiosity or a combination. I have a friend who's a very gifted crafts person, and she started as a kid sewing and knitting, but she's developed really specialized skills in rosemaling and crewing and all sorts of different crafts projects. My daughter spent 3 years on a feeding tube, and that experience has made me an expert at something I never wanted to be an expert at. Learning how to use a G-tube with a kid, how to put a G-tube in, how to take it out, how to hide it when you're a kid and you don't want it hanging out there, and then how to navigate a children's hospital and deal with different doctors. So all of those things are part of my specialized knowledge. Will I write a book about it someday? I don't know, but it's on my list. And then the last area I want you to consider is hobbies and interests. Look at how you spend your free time. What ideas, topics, and people are you curious about? Is there an activity or topic that you've created a lot of, that you've gathered a lot of information about, like cycling or running or baking or crafting? Because this may be another area of specialized knowledge that you can focus on when it comes to writing your book. So what do you have in your life like this? So put these on your topic list. So once you're done, you're going to have lists of topics in four different areas. And you may think of other areas as well. So once you're done with your list of topics, start putting together a list of, well, could this be a book idea? Look at books that are on the shelf and think, okay, so someone wrote 50 Days to Thinner Thighs. Could I write a book, 50 Days to Eating Healthy, or 50 Days to... So take some of their structure ideas and start thinking, what kind of book could I put together? What I want you to do is come up with, a list of 2 to 5 topic ideas before you can move on to step 2. So for those of you who joined us a little bit late, I want to just say again what the ideal formula of a best-selling book is. For me, the ideal formula of a best-selling book, and this is my creation, this isn't borrowed from any of the other people who have their best-selling blueprints out there. My ideal formula is a hot topic, which we've just gotten done talking about, plus a defined target market, plus a format that works. So hot topic, plus defined target market, plus format that works. So we've talked a little bit about what makes a target hot, or makes a topic hot. It's a solution to a common problem, a solution that's quick, innovative, and simple, and a solution that's written by an author with credibility. The second area is to find your defined target market, otherwise known as raving fans. Best-selling books connect with a specific, definable, easy-to-reach audience. If you can find a definable market, even if it's a small market of, say, 60,000, 70,000 people who are already bought into the idea of your book, you have a much better chance of becoming a bestseller. I have a colleague here in Milwaukee who's written a couple of books on the cognitive effects of MS. And because Montel Williams has MS as well, he's been on the Montel Williams show several times. And what he's done, he's become a best-selling author in a very small niche of the market. So he's not on the USA Today bestseller list. He's not on the New York Times bestseller list. But he sold a lot of copies of these books because he found a really clearly defined target market. And so before you put time in writing on your book idea, you need to think about test marketing your book idea. So you really need to think about, does my book have a defined target market that I can quantify? You're going to want to be able to say, okay, I know who these people are, and I know how to sell to them. And so let's talk about ways to kind of research your market and then a little bit about how to test your market. So how do you research your market? I think the first step is just kind of doing a browse, a search online, and a search of the shelves. So you want to look at current bookstores, and you want to search online sites like Goodreads and Amazon and other sorts of places that have a lot of book, a lot of books on them. And so you want to think about questions like this. Are there other books about my topic out there? What do they look like? Do they sell well? Counterintuitive as it sounds, as I've talked about before, one of the signs of a marketable idea is one that has already been done well by somebody else. Think about how the market was flooded with vampire books after the Twilight series took off, or flooded with how it was flooded with dystopian novels after the Hunger Games took off. Or just look at the diet section. You know, you get a few diet books that sell really well, and probably every week there's a new diet book coming out. The newest craze is this fast diet, where you eat normally for 5 days a week, and then you fast for 2 days a week and eat just like 500 calories. So, you know, knowing that there's already books in that category that sell pretty well is a good indication that your book could sell well. So, you know, spend some time on Goodreads, online book vendors like Amazon. On Goodreads, you can measure sales by the number of reviews, how many people have rated it, how many people have reviewed it. On Amazon, just check out the book rank in several different categories. You know, how well does this book sell in business? How well does it sell in general adult nonfiction, and so forth? In addition to checking online book sites, you're going to want to check online sites that deal in information. So blogs, vlogs, information marketing sites, support groups. Are there people seeking information on this topic? Are there people who have blogs on this topic? Because all of those things suggest some area of interest. A second really good tool, if you still have a bookstore in your town, is to ask a bookseller, or if you have a friend who's a bookseller in another town. Your local neighborhood bookseller is a really valuable resource in researching the marketability of your book. Online book companies can give you sales metrics, but they can't give you the kind of anecdotal evidence that you need about what real customers buy. About once a month, I have lunch with one of the booksellers at our neighborhood bookstore, and mostly what I ask her is, you know, what are people asking for that you can't give them? What are the holes in the shelves? And I ask in a number of different categories that she's specialized in. So I want to, you know, booksellers with years of experience know what kinds of books fly off the shelf and what books get sent back to the publisher or get sold as remainders. So I would interview several bookstores in different types of neighborhood. I would think about, you know, if I'm thinking about who my ideal audience is, find a bookstore in that kind of a neighborhood to see what sells. And ask booksellers about books on your topic. I mean, I think we're so afraid that someone's going to steal our idea that we won't talk about it. But I don't think that's really a danger, because maybe someone could, you know, write a book on your idea, fine, but they're not going to write it the way you would write it or with the take on it that you would write it. So I think it's okay to talk, you know, to booksellers and people about your idea. I mean, you don't want to tell them everything, but just to find out. And, you know, one of the things I found, I was writing a book on journaling. Journaling is a way of healing, and my agent found this out. My bookseller told me, and a number of other people told me, you know, journaling books just don't sell. I mean, there's a glut of them on the market. There's a lot of them there. So you want some there, but you don't want a glut. And they have low sales records, so it's not like you're going to get to be a famous writer from this. The third thing you need to do is research your readers, and this is really key, because these are going to be the people who are going to buy your book. So create a profile of your ideal reader and figure out where they gather. So this is kind of marketing research. If possible, join groups of people that fit the profile of your ideal reader and learn from them. I think online networking sites like LinkedIn are really helpful for this, because you can join groups of people. So if you're writing a book about gardening, you can join groups of people who garden. If you're writing a book about, you know, parents of children with serious illnesses, you can join support groups for parents. So look around, attend networking events and other gatherings for people who are in your ideal market. Ask people in your ideal reader groups what kind of resource would be the most helpful to them. Find a few people to interview in depth about what sorts of books and resources they use and what kinds of resources they are looking for. So by doing some of this research ahead of time, you are providing, you're gathering really good information so that these people that you're going to now, you're able to go back to and say, look, you know, you're going to know that you're creating a book specifically for these people that you've already been connected to and talking to. And so in a sense, as you're researching readers, you're also building your platform. So your action step after doing all of this kind of research is to really put down your defined market in detail. So put down on a computer file or in your notebook some things like, who are the people who want your book? What do these people do for a living? Where do they do it? How will they find the book in these places? How many of these people are out there? Are there statistics that will help you define the size of this market? So if you're writing to people with mental health issues, you can look at the National Institutes of Mental Health. If you want to look at an age category or an income bracket, you can look at the Census Bureau. If you want to look at a specific sort of demographic or collection of people who've had similar experiences, you can look at professional organizations or support organizations. You know, what are their numbers? Are there, you know, maybe there are 40,000 people in the United States who have such and such a disease who will be interested in your book on blah. And you know this because they all are members of, you know, fill in the blank. Then ask, you know, why do they need this book? I would encourage you to write a profile of your ideal reader, including their age, gender, occupation, income, hobbies, and then list at least three places online and three places offline where they hang out and where potentially you'll be able to sell your book. Now, if you've ever written a book proposal, you're thinking, this sounds familiar, because these are the kinds of things you need to tell an agent or an editor in a book proposal. They're also the kinds of things, if you're going to self-publish your book, you're going to need to know if you're going to sell your book, because you're going to have to find the readers. So if you're going to have a best-selling book, you're going to first figure out your market. Is your market a defined target market? And the last step to doing this, once you've kind of asked, done the research online, asked the bookseller, researched your readers, is to actually test the market. Test to see if your ideas actually meet the needs of the audience. And the way to do this, I think that's the easiest, is to offer blog posts. You know, write a few articles and post them on blogs where your ideal readers hang out and see what kind of engagement they garner. If you get a better than usual rate of engagement than you do from your other blog posts, this might be a kind of a sticky issue. You know, another thing you can do is speak at conferences. So you find your ideal market, you go to a couple of their conferences, you speak about your idea, you figure out, is it sticky? And all of this work you're doing is helping you kind of define your idea, define your book project, so that by the time you're actually writing the book, you have a lot more information and a lot more clarity. So I really encourage people to test the market. And if you're feeling anxious about, oh my gosh, someone's going to steal the idea, go ahead and create a little paper trail for yourself. So go ahead and give yourself a book title. And when you do your bio, say, this is an excerpt from my forthcoming book, blah, 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 blah. So I could say about today's talk, is an excerpt from my forthcoming book, Anatomy of a Bestseller. And that protects me. So the third thing that makes a book a bestseller in our formula. So remember, the formula is a hot topic plus a defined target market plus a format that works equals a best-selling book. So the third key ingredient is a structure that meets your audience's need. Over the years, I've learned that a clear book structure helps me write faster. And as a reader, I connect with a book better if it has a clear and helpful book structure. Best-selling authors tend to use familiar story structures so that readers feel at home when they read. You know, think about when you're at a public event and someone's speaking and they say, "Once upon a time." That's a familiar story beginning, so you know exactly what to do. I like to compare book structure to, house layout. You know, the rooms of our house are designed to be set up in certain ways, and let's just say in the United States. So it's pretty conventional that a kitchen has all the stuff for cooking, and that a dining room has a dining room table, and that a living room has some couches, and so forth. And we come to expect that, and we find that comfortable. So if you're going to a friend's house for dinner, when you enter the home, you're going to expect that you'll kind of hang out in the living room or in the kitchen, then you'll eat dinner around a dining room table, and it will be very easy. Imagine if you walked into someone's house for dinner, and instead of having a dining room and a living room, they just had bedrooms everywhere. So the front room was a bedroom, had a bed in it, and the dining room had a bed in it. And the kitchen maybe had a little day bed in it. And you're like, well, where are we going to eat? You just have no idea because it's confusing. So your book structure is like the layout and furnishings in a house. If you can make it something that fits the reader's needs and expectations, if you can use a format that sold well in the past, then you're much more likely to sell your book. Readers are going to pick up a book that's in an unfamiliar structure, and some are going to be like, oh, that's really cool. And some are going to pick it up and go, I'm not interested in that. So I want to talk about five book structures that I've seen a lot lately in best-selling books, and I'll give you some examples. There are many, many book structures that in the book I'm working on, I'm putting together chapters on each of them, as well as some content on the different pieces within a chapter. So these are some things that book structures that are familiar right now. The first is the project book. The project book is a written record of a writer's attempt to conquer a project. Can fit in a number of genres. Usually it's kind of memoir, how-to, self-helpy. Popular ones, you probably know that A.J. Jacobs is kind of the king of the project book. He's done The Year of Living Biblically. I think he did one about reading. I know he did one called Drop Dead Healthy, One Man's Humble Quest for Bodily Perfection. And, you know, the poor guy's family, he puts them through this year of trying these things. But he's really gotten good at these. You know, other ones that have been very popular are The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin, Julie and Julia by Julia Powell, which became a movie. And then one that's not as popular anymore but was a bestseller is Make the Bread, Buy the Butter, where Jennifer Reese talks about what you should cook from scratch and what you shouldn't. You know, the insides of these often look like memoirs with a series of chapters that recount the author's experience along with some connection to their past experiences, their current distress or an emotional battle. Others have actual little projects in it that you can do yourself as a reader, but it's basically a chronological experience, so you can live this year-long or whatever-long project with the reader, with the writer. The second thing, kind of book that I think is very popular is the Big Idea book. The Big Idea book presents a single important idea in a compelling way. So these are very common and generally what you see a lot on the New York Times bestseller list. They're like The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, Tribes by Seth Godin. And usually the insides of these are just the author presents the single idea in the first paragraph, and that's probably all you need. But then they tell stories about how the idea either came to be, took root, was developed in different contexts. So each of the chapters kind of will take the idea, kind of, you know, idea for individuals, idea for groups, ideas for churches, you know, and develop it in different contexts. The third kind of book that's very popular is a how-to book, and we've talked a lot about those today. This is the how to accomplish a task like losing weight, or how to solve a problem like overcoming my disorganization, or how to understand and apply information, like how to build a house or how to fix my door. So some of the best-selling books that are around in this category are like Jumpstart to Skinny by Bob Harper, an old one, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Organizing from the Inside Out by Julie Morgenstern. You know, how-to books can be organized in a lot of different ways, and there are basically three that I've seen as I've looked. One is one process in multiple projects, like container gardening. So, you know, this is what a container garden is, and this is 50 ways to make a container garden. Another is one topic, multiple lessons. So, like the complete do-it-yourself handyman. So the topic is being a handyman. Here are 50 lessons on how to fix things in your house. Or one process, multiple steps. So, like marathoning for mortals or jumpstart to skinny. So here's your goal is to get skinny. And here is multiple steps towards getting skinny. Do this, and at the end of reading the book and doing the steps, you'll be skinny. So those are very popular. And I'm going to try to wrap this up in the next few minutes so that you'll have time for questions. But we have two more books to talk about. The fourth kind of book that's very popular is the list book, which as a writer, you know, is kind of challenging because basically all they are is a list, either with or without pictures. I was just at my mom's house last weekend, and she had a list book about, you know, like the 100 best photographs of National Geographic and why. The most all-time best-selling list book is 14,000 Things to Be Happy About by Barbara Ann Kipfer. So it's just a list of, you know, 100 or 14,000 things in a book. And the last kind of book that I think works, and there are a few more that I'll cover in the book but I'm not covering in the class, another one is a collection book. So much like the list book, the collection book gathers a group of quotes, prayers, photos, essays, inspiration or questions around a theme. So it could be photos like in cake wrecks when professional cakes go seriously wrong. It could be a collection of essays like Be the Miracle, 50 Lessons for Making the Impossible Possible by Regina Brett. So basically a collection book is just a collection of the same kind of thing and separated into thematic chapters. So kind of the action step in terms of book structure, once you have your idea, so you've got your hot dot idea, then you've got your number two, your raving fans, and then three is book format. What I encourage all my clients to do is make a list of their favorite best-selling books, the books that have influenced them the most, the ones they go back to most often, the ones they have warm, fuzzy feelings about. So just make a list of those. Look at your bookshelf or any record you have of the books you've read and kind of remember, what are the books that I've really loved in my life? Or what are the books that I've seen that I've really been admiring? And then look at what structure they had. You know, what were the big pieces? What was the chapter structure like? What kind of a book was it? What were the small pieces that made up each of the chapters? Because this will help you create a map to making your own map for your best-selling book. So again, the ideal formula is a hot topic plus a defined target market plus a format that works. And so the other thing you'll do as you do the format is, how does it work with this idea? You know, is this a good fit? And when you have all those three, those are going to make your book much more likely to become a bestseller. So now, of course, to become a best-selling book, you're going to have to take your idea through the steps I laid out today, and then there's some more steps, you know, like writing the book well and creating a platform and stuff like that. But these three things that we've talked about today really make up the meat of what makes a book good enough to become a bestseller. Now, here's where I give you my disclaimer. Just because a book's perfect and wonderful and should be a bestseller doesn't mean it will. And just because a book's crappy doesn't mean it won't be a bestseller. So there's always that kind of weird thing in the market. Some books that become bestsellers are badly written, but they still become bestsellers. And some books that don't become, some books that are written perfectly and have the great market and so forth just don't birth at the right time or don't become bestsellers. So there's no guarantee. But these tools should help you get closer. And I'm offering a class this spring starting at the end of April, to kind of go through each of these steps in turn so that you kind of have some templates and worksheets to kind of work through this, and a group and a coach to talk to about them. And I'll send that out when I send out the recording. Now we have about 15 minutes left for questions. And I would love to hear from anybody who would like to ask questions. So go ahead to unmute yourself. It is *7. And I'm happy to answer your questions about anything. And before you ask your question, just a reminder that on April 30th, we'll meet here again. And Kara Henschel, who owns her own publishing house, is going to talk about the wide variety of publishing options, just to kind of help us sort through the confusion. And at the end of May, John Adamus is going to be here to talk again about editing. So if anybody has any questions, please pop up. And I'll do my best to answer them. So any questions? And I know this is, you know, this is a lot to take in. It was kind of fun to research best-selling books, look online at all the diet books. Any questions from anybody who's out there? So one of the things I'd love for you to do as part of my target market, and I'll put this in the email, is if you have questions, if you have things that you think, well, this doesn't sound right, and I'd like to really have you address this in the book, I would love to hear from you. So email me, Rochelle@rightnowcoach.com, WriteNowCoach.com, with your questions. And if I can answer them personally to you, I'll answer them personally, but I also like to include them in the book so that I can make the book more helpful for you. My goal is to make this, although it sounds like a really flashy topic, my goal is to make this more reliable and sensible than flashy, so that you're really getting some good information that's going to help you create a book that's going to do the best job it can do. So any questions? It's a quiet group today. Well, it's been good to have you with us today. I'm going to go ahead and head out and have some chocolate. So everybody have a wonderful day. This is Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and this has been the Right Now Mastermind class on Anatomy of a Bestseller. Take care and have a great day.